Okay. All right, so we'll start this year again our study of Megillas Esther. I guess we'll learn it this week and next week in anticipation of Purim, which is just a short way off. One episode in particular I want to take up. Megillah, of course, is multifaceted and it has many layers. It's an amazing story of coincidences, of accidents, of events that are seemingly random and unrelated, but when woven together, present the tapestry of a Nes Nistar, of a hidden miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a hidden miracle, hidden in the sense that it didn't involve any deviations of nature, any distortions of the natural world, but in fact shows in a very open and blatant way to those who are spiritually sensitive the hand of Hashem. So we could probably isolate 10 or 15 different events, each of them somewhat small in its own right, in their own right, but each of them indispensable to the story. That is to say, if they had not happened, then the story would not have happened. The salvation would not have happened, or at least it would not have happened in the way that it did. It would have had to have taken place in another way. So one such story really begins the Megillah, and that's the rise and fall of Vashti Hamalko. Vashti, the wife of Ahasuerus. Now, Perek Beis begins, Achar Hadvarim Ho'ele, after these matters, immediately after these matters, Kisho Hamas HaMelech Ahasuerus, when the anger of the king subsided, Zacharis Vashti, Ve'is Asher Asoso, Ve'is Asher Nigzar Oleho. He remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Why the three references? So Rashi says, Zacharis Vashti, he remembered Es Yafya, he remembered her beauty. The Netzav, and he was saddened by the fact that he was no longer in the presence of this beautiful wife that he'd had. Of course, he killed her, but he still regretted that she was no longer there. Ve'is Asher Asasa, what she had done. So the Medrash really fills in a lot of the details here. The Medrash says that he remembered the Gzerah that he had decreed that Vashti Shetikanes Lafanav Aruma, Velo Nichnezo, that he had decreed that Vashti appear before him and his fellow merrymakers at the royal banquet, and she did not. The Kotzaf Aleho, and he grew angry at her, Vaharago, and he killed her. So now, after a few days, a very short time, after a few days, and the wine had dissipated, and the anger had diminished, Mindikatla Shari Toheba, the Medra says. From the fact that he had killed her, he started to regret it. And he said, Lomo, why would I have done such a thing? Sha'asto kahogen. She did, in fact, what was natural, was normal under the circumstances, to refuse such a request. Ve'is Hashem nigzara leho, and what had been decreed against her, without any trial, essentially, the execution took place essentially as a result of an impulsive act. He consulted with his advisors. One set to kill her, and he killed her without any appeal, any investigation, any deliberation. So what he had done is shaloka hogan. It was not proper. Viloma also lakach. And why then did this happen to Vashti? Because she was the one who did not agree, who talked Ahasuerus into not allowing the Jews to build a Beis HaMikdash. So now the Medrash adds a point, which of course we have to reflect on. If not for the king's execution of his own wife, Esther would never have become the queen, and the Yeshua which took place would never have taken place in that way. Who knows what else might not have happened. So the question is, what possessed Ahasuerus to want his wife, the queen of his kingdom, to appear naked at a royal banquet in which the noblemen of all 127 provinces had been invited. Why would the king want the queen to appear unclothed at such an event? It's not the Super Bowl, after all. It's a royal banquet. So why would he ask for such a thing? Now, we have to understand who was Vashti and understand what the Gemara says, that when he made this Mishnah, so the Gemara Megillah says, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, Bas Satan Verikeid Beinehem. Satan came and danced amongst them. Satan, that was the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, intruded, and in order to effect the salvation, danced among them, Vaharagas Vashti, and he wound up killing Vashti, setting into motion all the events which would take place that follows. Yes? Okay. So who was Vashti? Gemara says, also in Megillah, that Vashti bas b'no shel Nebuchadnezzar harasha. Vashti was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and he reigned 45 years. He was succeeded by his son Evil Merodach, who was also an evil king, but not as bad as his father. Evil Merodach was succeeded either by his son or his brother. It's unclear who. It seems that it was his son, Belshazzar. Belshazzar was then the ruler of all these kingdoms. Belshazzar was the famous person, famous monarch, in the book of Daniel, who brought out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash to celebrate its destruction. At a time when he calculated that the 70 years of exile that God had decreed against the Jews had passed, Belshazzar was the one who saw the famous handwriting on the wall, that phrase, Menei Menei Tekel Farsin, that the days of your kingdom are numbered. In fact, that night he was killed by Daryavash, Darius, and Cyrus. Darius and Cyrus then became the rulers. Darius, Daryavash from Madai, succeeded by Koresh, who was of Paras. Koresh was succeeded, it seems, after he died in a coup by Ahasuerus. Now, Ahasuerus is of somewhat mysterious origin. The Gemara Megillah says that he was the brother of Nebuchadnezzar. He was part of the royal family. But that would make him Babylonian. It would seem that what the Gemara means is that he was the brother of Nebuchadnezzar in terms of his personal behavior. They're brothers under the skin. I mean, both Rishoyim, both hated Jews. And in fact, the Gemara does say that Ahasuerus hated Jews even more than Haman did, if we can imagine such a thing. And there's a separate machlokas, whether he was a pikeach, a very clever person, or a tipesh, a fool in the common conception of Ahasuerus, a drunkard, a fool who is very easily manipulated. But the dominant opinion seems to be that fools don't achieve power. Certainly, Ahasuerus, one of the three people ever to rule the entire world at one time, Nebuchadnezzar being another. And therefore, it seems more likely he was a pikeach, who may have had other problems, but he was a pikeach. He was a clever person, very wise. He knew how to seize power. But Ahasuerus was not necessarily fit to rule. It's arguable whether he came from a royal household, which in the ancient world meant everything. And it was the night that Belshazzar died and Daryavash took power that the Medrash says in the Yalkut Shimoni that Daryavash gave Vashti, who was probably his sister, to Ahasuerus, who was one of the up-and-coming aides in the royal house. Now, the Gemara says, also Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, that at the beginning of the Megillah, it says, Vayhibi Me'Ahasuerus, Hu Ahasuerus Hamolech Mehodu Vad Kush. Ahasuerus who ruled, not Melech Ahasuerus, the king, but who ruled, meaning he slowly consolidated his power. He wasn't the natural king. Rather, he was a molech. And the Gemara says, Shemolach, Rama Rav, Shemolach me'atzmo. He ruled on his own. Meaning, Amri lo l'shvach, some say it in praise of him, Dilo hava inish dechoshiv l'malka kvasei. At the time after Dayavish and Koresh had passed from the scene, there was no more qualified person to rule the kingdom. Amri lo l'gnai, others say that it's disparaging. That he was unfit to rule. So how then did he rule? He ingratiated himself to people. He was very wealthy. He bought influence in all the provinces. And slowly, Hamolech, slowly he accumulated his power until he reached the stage where Sheva Vesrim Umeyom Medina. He ruled over 127 provinces, the entire civilized world at the time. Now that, of course, presents to Ahasuerus what will amount to a lifelong problem. Because he had seized power, and because he was not necessarily fit for rule, or from the most distinguished lineage. In fact, the Gemara says that he literally worked his way up. He was a groomsman for horses. He was in charge of the stables at first in the royal house. So I guess he worked his way from the bootstraps all the way up to the palace. And he was aware of his humble origins and very aware of the way he had seized power. And no doubt then, it's no different than now, every despot, every tyrant who seizes power by force is afraid, lives with the fear that someone else is going to overthrow him. As he took power, so too he will lose power. So that becomes a dominant strain in Ahasuerus's worldview, his governance, and how he deals with people well. As we know, he's paranoid, he's insecure, he's always suspicious of people plotting against him, big son and Seresh at one time, Mordechai at another time, Haman tells him, and finally, Haman, who comes in the middle of the night, and Ahasuerus is most perturbed that he should have this uninvited nocturnal visitor. So all this plays into his paranoia, and his insecurity also is a function of the fact that he didn't really have credibility as a monarch because of his origin. So to cement his claim to the throne, he married Vashti. All right, he was moving up the hierarchy. So through Vashti, who was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, she herself was a princess, so he gained credibility. Like you find ad hayom, until today, the marriages in Europe, or even in the Arab world, they'll take princes or princesses from different kingdoms, different tribes, and marry them together. So one of the most famous in the last half century, the marriage of Ferdinand and Isabella, which didn't work out well for us, frankly. Ferdinand was the king of Castile, and of Aragon, and Isabella was the princess of Castile, the two rival kingdoms within Spain, and their parents worked at a shidduch, and that was it. They consolidated the rule over Spain, became a very powerful empire, expelled us, sent Columbus, and they moved history forward. But it's just typical of the way royal marriages take place. Often they're for political purposes. So this was true of Ahasuerus as well. Ahasuerus always had insecurity because he was not inherently entitled to rule. His claim was through force, and his claim on one level was through power as well, through Vashti, because Vashti represented the princess, the royal house of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, what happens? So Megillah tells us, Bayomim ahem kisheves hamelech Ahasuerus, for Perek Aleph Pasuk Bez, Akisei Malchuso, came to pass that Ahasuerus was sitting on his throne, Asher b'Shushan Abira, b'Shnas Shalosh l'Malcho, in the third year of his kingship, his reign, Asa Mishte l'Chol Sarov Avadov. He makes a banquet for all his officers, his ministers, his servants. So Medrash says, why did he make this mishta? It's a number of reasons. One, it was the third anniversary of his reign. So every king celebrates the day of his coronation. Secondly, some say that it was to celebrate his marriage at that time to Vashti, meaning unlike the opinion we addressed earlier, that he married her years before at the intervention of Belshazzar, this opinion says, no, they were newly married. And the third opinion is the one which touches us and really runs through the entire first perek, Bishnas Shalosh L'Bitul Melechas Beis HaMikdash. Now, the third year from the time that he had stopped the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, this is a famous story, known to us from here, as well as in the Sefer Daniel, that in Daniel, Achashverosh is called Artachshasta. It's actually called Achashverosh too, in one pasuk there. In Ezra is called Artachshasta. But, in any event, what happened? So Koresh, as we know, Koresh, who was called Mashiach Hashem, one of God's anointed, relatively righteous king of Persia, who also ruled the entire world, gave permission to the Jews five and a half decades or so after the Churban to begin the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. And Koresh reigned just 3 years, but he... Koresh reigned just 3 years when he was succeeded by Achashverosh. One of Achashverosh's acts... This is not working. One of Achashverosh's acts, alluded to earlier, was the stopping of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Navi tells us in Daniel that the Samaritans, sent a letter to Achashverosh, the Jews are rebelling against him. The Samaritans, political leadership at the time in Samaria, in the Shamron, included two sons of Haman, who always hated Jews. They sent a missive to the king that the Jews are plotting against him, and the king stopped it. Now, that wasn't the only reason. See, Achashverosh, one of his geniuses as a political leader, it's not easy to rule over 127 different ethnic groups. As you know, you see from Yugoslavia down to today and other parts of the world. And there are just four or five ethnic groups. To rule a kingdom cohesively with 127 ethnic groups, you have to know how to cater, or different way, pander to each of the ethnic groups. So one of the 127 provinces was Judea, where many Jews lived. So they wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh understood this is something that would keep them in line, keep them loyal to him, so he permitted it. The Medrash I started quoting earlier about Vashti says, the Gzeirah against Vashti, L'fi shelo hoysa manachas Achashverosh litein reshus livnos Beis HaMikdash. She was instrumental in thwarting Achashverosh's plan to allow the building of the Beis HaMikdash. She actually started building it, and then he stopped it. But Omerislo, she would say to him, meaning Omerislo, again, Lashon Hova, like Hamalech, she would say to him, meaning it was an ongoing conversation, because he didn't listen to her at first. But over time, he eventually did, and then the message of Haman's children put him over the top. So she would say to him regularly, Mashech Rivu Avosai, what my father's destroyed, meaning my grandfather Nebuchadnezzar, Atame Vakesh Livnos, you want to rebuild? So she took it personally. We'll see as the parak unfolds that she was a Jew hater as well. But she took it very personally that he would allow the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, which in a sense was her grandfather's crowning achievement. That's why he's really known to this day amongst Jews. And even in the ancient world, he was celebrated for those feats because the Beis HaMikdash was perceived to be invulnerable to attack, invincible because it was the Beis Hashem, the house of God. So she convinced Achashverosh to stop. Now, the party then, after 3 years, represented another calculation. As I mentioned a number of times before, and just very briefly, the entire ancient world knew of this prophecy. I mean, the Jews are always special people. They knew we were unique. Even though during this period of time we had stumbled and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and we were exiled, but the world knew of the prophecy of the 70 years. The Jews would be exiled for 70 years. It wasn't clear, though, what exactly the 70-year period represented. So, as Chazal tell us, when Belshazzar calculated 70 years from the beginning of the reign of his father, Nebuchadnezzar, and those 70 years concluded, and the Beis HaMikdash was not destroyed, so Belshazzar took it as a sign that the prophecy would not be fulfilled, and the Jews would forever be exiled. So he made a great party, and he brought out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash to celebrate, and of course we know what happens. He was killed that very night. Just a few years later, Ahasuerus has another calculation, and that's this one here. 70 years since Golus Yechonio, really when Malchus Yisrael ended, Malchus Yehuda ended, and the king Yehoiachin was sent into exile. So Ahasuerus understood the 70-year period to represent 70 years of the exile of Malchus Yisrael. When that 70-year period had elapsed, that's this time right now. Bishnas Shalosh Lemalcho, Asa Mishteh Lechol Sarav Avadav. He made a party against celebrating the defeat of the Jews. In fact, as we learn later, the 70-year period was simply between the first Churban and the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. So that was the 70-year period was tied to the Batei Mikdash and not to any other event. But they were unclear on that. Ahasuerus makes this party, and he, like his predecessors, bring out the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. Pasuk Zayin. Vashkos bechlei zahav v'chelim mikelim shonim. They drank all types of wines, and they had every type of food imaginable. Ahasuerus demonstrated the abundance of wealth that he had. So he used all the vessels, including clay zahav, and one vessel was finer than the next. And the Medrash elaborates, crystal, silver, and then gold, and then the finest of all. V'chelim michelim shonim, those were clay Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says. The kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, the vessels used in the Beis HaMikdash, which still had, now it's almost 60 years, a little less than 60 years after the Churban, they still had a luster that apparently no other vessels in the ancient world had. Ahasuerus takes them out, and of course, as a sidelight, you have Mordechai admonishing the Jews not to attend the Mishta. And this we've discussed in the past, and they attended anyway. And essentially they're attending a banquet that's celebrating their own downfall, their own defeat. And yet they do attend, and no doubt they rationalized it to themselves that the king wants it, who are we to say no, and the food is kosher, so what's the real problem? We don't have to party over the Beis HaMikdash, we'll celebrate his anniversary, etc. So they found many heterim, and that's why the Gemara says, that generation deserved destruction. Because they enjoyed the feast, the banquet of that wicked person, Ahasuerus, and essentially celebrating the Churban Beis HaMikdash and their own downfall. So they were lacking in self-respect. Although you find many times Jews are mora heter la'atzmam, permission to do things which are otherwise not necessarily justifiable because they want it to be. They rationalize, and that's exactly what happened to this generation here. So Ahasuerus, no holds barred, takes out all the kalim. It's not only a feast of wine and food, it's an orgy of women as well. Which brings us to Vashti. So Pasuk Tes says, Gam Vashti Amalko Asta Mishtei Nashim. Even Vashti the queen made a banquet of women. Beis HaMalchus, in the royal house, Asher LaMelech HaChashverosh, that belonged to the king. Notice the subtlety of the Megillah. First it calls her Vashti HaMalko, and we'll see in a moment. That's the perception of Ahasuerus, that she's Vashti, but she's only a Malko because of Ahasuerus. Vashti herself has a different perception. But she makes too a Mishtena Shinu. Why did she make? Why does the Megillah relate this? So Medrash says, Ma roa kosev lefarsem suda sashel Vashti. Why did the Megillah publicize this Mishta that she made? What's the difference? That was the story that, as it unfolds, could have not included this point. Kidei lehodia leiza shalva este nichneses, to relate to us to the type of royal setting, power, glamour, wealth, influence, into which Esther would find herself. So we know the queen is not necessarily a powerful person, just like first ladies are not necessarily powerful. Some are, some are not. Depends how much interest they take in policy. You see, Vashti Hamalka took an interest in policy, in many things, including the fate of the Jews. So Esther was walking into a situation, or would walk into a situation, whereby she would be, if she wanted to be, in a situation of prominence. She makes the party Beis Hamalchus, in the royal house. So how is that possible? Ahasuerus has his own party in the royal house. Party went on for 6 months, which is quite a party, even by our standards of weddings today. 6 months, a long time. So what's Beis Hamalchus? So the Gemara says in Megillah, Beis Hanoshim Miboyle, it should say she made it in the women's house, the women's quarters. No. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, I'm sorry, Amar Rava, Shnehem Ledvar Aveira Niskavnu. Both of them, Ahasuerus and Vashti, they were both promiscuous. And they intended to propagate a promiscuous feast. Ahasuerus provides the men, Vashti provides the women. We should never think, as we'll discuss, that Vashti's refusal to appear is out of modesty. That's not her concern. On the contrary, they were in a state of mind, a state of being, with pure hedonism, pursuit of physical pleasure that's unlimited, not moderated at all. The Gemara says, people say, one person brings the large pumpkins, another brings the small pumpkins. It's an expression the Gemara had, meaning on their own level, maybe there was a quantitative difference between the pursuit of pleasure. But in terms of quality, it's exactly the same. They both had one intention. That's why she brought in her bevy of women and others into this party. Vayom HaShvi'i. And she's also, as the Gemara is noting, a wicked person in her own right. She's great, and she's also wicked. Vayom HaShvi'i Pasuk Yud, on the seventh day, Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, it was Shabbos, Kitov Lev HaMelech Vayoyin, when the king's heart was full with his wine, Omar Lemuhumon Bizesach Harvono Biksov Avakso Zesar V'Charkash Shavas Asar Isim HaMasharsim Espenemel Chashverosh. She said to his seven closest ministers, his seven aides, what did he say? Lavias Vashti Amalko Lefnei HaMelech BeKeser Malchus. To bring Vashti Amalko, again, Vashti first, Malko second, to the Melech BeKeser Malchus, with a royal crown. Megillah uses a euphemistic phrase, meaning the royal crown and nothing else. She should only wear her crown. To show, to demonstrate to the peoples, the officers, her beauty, because, as the Megillah testifies, she was very beautiful. How did this come about? So the Medrash says that, as I noted earlier, I'll show you, when they came now to rejoice over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which, as we perceive it, is just, it's God's will, but an unfortunate necessity. It represents the diminution of mankind, not the greatness of mankind, of Kal Yisrael. So when they came to rejoice over the Churban, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Beis HaMikdash Chorev, the Mikdash is destroyed, V'Rosh HaZeh Osem Marzechin, and this person is making a party of festivities, of frivolity and licentiousness. V'gam Vashti Harisha Osam Marzechen, Vashti herself makes her own party to celebrate the same thing. It's Gam Vashti Amalka. She too, she was celebrating the same thing Ahasuerus was. So that could not be left to stand. So the king decides to ask her to appear unclothed. Now, what happens? So the Gemara says in Megillah Daf Yud Aleph Amud Bez, Ayom HaShvi, on the seventh day, Ketov Lev HaMelech Bayoyin. So the Gemara says that until that day he was sober. It took him 7 days. 7 days for him to become inebriated. Amar Rava Osa Yom HaShvi Shabbos Oyo. That seventh day was Shabbos. What's the difference? Shebemido Shoda Modeg Moded in Lo. We have a klal, a principle. Mido Keneged Mido. Measure for measure. As one doles out rewards of punishment, so too he receives. Milamed Shehoiso Vashti Arisho Mevio Benos Yisrael. To teach us that Vashti, the wicked Vashti, would bring her Jewish maidservants, Umafshiton Arumos, and strip them of their clothing, Ve'osevohen Melocha B'Shabbos, and make them do work, especially on Shabbos. So now you have Mido Keneged Mido. Bayom HaShvi, when this happens, is Shabbos. And Lefichach Tziva Lahavi Osar Rumo. She was commanded, she was directed by the king to appear before him and his friends naked as well. Now, this type of approach, by the way, Nazis were quite familiar with. The degradation involved in stripping human beings of their clothing, which leaves a person feeling vulnerable and defenseless, even if they're still physically strong and robust. They knew that as well. And they knew as well to set aside special treatment for Jews on the holiest of days, to assign extra work on Shabbos, or in their fiendishness, to give them extra food, a little extra food, on Yom HaKippurim. So they should recognize, they should feel a psychological torment built on all the other type of abuse they would receive as well. So Vashti knew this too. Nothing is new in Jewish life. Nazis innovated absolutely nothing. So she would bring Jewish women, degrade them by stripping them, and force them to work on Shabbos as well. That's Mida Keneged Mida. Lahavi, to bring, so let me just quote the Medrash. Yes.
In, you have these maid servants who are, you know, treated as slaves, and on the other hand, you have these Jews who are coming to the Mishneh HaMelech, and you have someone like Mordechai who...
Right, refuses.
People who are, it seems like there are people who are living normal, even prominent.
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's these maid servants. So
that's correct.
So what was the state of the Jews? When they were taken by Nebuchadnezzar,
I mean, we discussed it earlier. What you had basically was when Ahasuerus consolidated power, he was able to appeal, to pander to each of the different ethnic groups that lived in his kingdom, 127 all told. And he brought representatives of each of them into leadership. He enslaved groups of them as well. So they should always know who's in charge. All right. So you had the same thing. You had Jews who were enslaved, and you had Jews who were in power. You had Jews who were merchants, and Jews who were poor. You had Jews learning Torah. You had Jews who were assimilated. That's what you had. They were living relatively normal lives in exile. I mean, it wasn't. It was not enslaved in the sense that you're living in a tyranny. Well, they have the right to enslave anyone. She herself chose to have Jewish slaves.
When they were exiled by Nebuchadnezzar.
Right. Right.
When they were first taken out of Israel, they were all taken out as slaves, captives.
Right.
When they get to Babel,
right, they settle in. That's not the next thing, but they weren't slaves for long. Well, it's later on, but they weren't slaves for long.
But when they were initially exiled, the Malchus was removed first, and someone couldn't
Right. The burdens of exile eased when Nebuchadnezzar died, and Evel-Merodach became the king. He was also a Rasha, but he wasn't as bad as his father. So then the Jews began to branch out, and we see Yeshivas were started, and they started to work and learn and prosper so much so they didn't want to leave Babel to return to Eretz Yisrael. So when Nebuchadnezzar died, that's when it changed. But you always had, depending on who the ruler was, here you see Vashti, every king has servants, all right? Vashti chose the Jewish servants because it meant more to her to degrade them. Yeah. I wanted to mention one other point, because the Medrash says something fascinating. You'll tell me if it's true. What's Beis HaMalchus? So Achashverosh set up special homes, beautiful homes for the women here. Nosno Sam Bivatim Mitzirin, put them in homes with the beautiful murals, painted, very fancy edifices. Dama Rabbi Avon said, Rotsa Isha Shete Bivatim Mitzuyarin Uvegodim Mitzuyarim Milecho Lagolim Mifutamim. Women would rather have nice clothing and nice homes than good food. All right? What do you say? The truth? All right. That's right. So avoid the fattened calves. But so Achashverosh, I mean, he knew how to keep the women happy too. He gave the women of the inner circle, not the innermost circle, but even the concentric circles you can remove from him. Take care of their physical needs so they won't incite their husbands that, you know, this guy has more and I want a bigger house, I want a larger wagon, etc. Now, Achashverosh demands through his servants, Lehavias Vashtia Malkol Lefnei HaMelech B'Keser Malchus. Omer Rabbi Aivu, this is the Medrash Rabbah. Kaparosan Shel Yisrael, the atonement of the Jews, really means the merit of the Jews, is that Kishi Yisrael Ochlin V'Shosin U'Smeichin, when Jews gather together and eat and drink and are happy, like a wedding, bar mitzvah, etc., what do? We say brachos, we sing zmiros, we talk Torah, we make brachos, we eat, we drink, but it's a simcha shel mitzvah. When the nations of the world eat and drink, they get involved in licentious matters. No one could say this is false, by the way. It's true until today. So they're sitting around at Achashverosh's banquet. Zelmer, so what do men talk about? Not in our circles, but you wouldn't know. How would you know? Women. Outside our circles, men talk about women. Zelmer, Modios knows. The women from Mead, they're the most beautiful women. Zelmer, Parsios knows. No, the Persian women are the most beautiful. And they're going back and forth until Achashverosh said to them, Omar Lohem, Oso Tipesh. So that fool Achashverosh then said to him, Kli she'osohish mishtamesh bo eino lo modis v'lo parsis elo kasdis. The vessel that I use, she's neither Mede nor Persian. She's a Chaldean. She's a Babylonian. All right? She's more beautiful than the Medes and the Persians put together. Mivakshim atem lirosa. You want to see her? Amru lo, they said to him, Hain, yes? Uvulvad shetayaruma, as long as she's naked. Omar Lahon, so he said to them, Hein varum, okay, yes, and she'll come naked as well. Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Chama Bar Guria, b'shem Rav Amar. Now you have very subtle negotiations taking place between Vashti and Achashverosh. All the Megillah says is Vatimo'ein Hamalko Vashti, that she refused, and note the phrase, Hamalko Vashti, not Vashti Malko. She refused. She's a Malko. She's a queen. It's not her dignity. Maybe not. Biksha likane safil betziltzul kizona. She said, look, I can't appear naked. I'll wear a tziltzul, chagor tsar, a thin sash, like a bikini. I'll come to them in a bikini, all right, with my crown. Velo hinicho oso. They didn't allow it. They said, no, that's not what we want. Omar Lon. The aruma, naked, they said to her. You have to come in naked. Omra, she said, Ekones below Kesar. So I'll come in then without wearing the crown. All right, why? Because she reasoned if she comes in without her crown, you know, most people in the ancient world, and certainly until television, didn't know what their monarchs looked like. So if she wasn't wearing the crown, she could say it wasn't her, it was somebody else. Achashverosh would know, but the others would not know. And of course, we know a hedyot, ain hedyot mishtamish bevidim malchus. No king or queen would ever let a commoner wear the crown, the royal crown. So she said, I'll come without the crown. Hein omrim shifcha hizo. They'll say, no, it's a shifcha, it's a maidservant. She sent someone else in her place. Tilbash bigdei malchus v'tikaneis. You have to wear bless you, the royal garb, you have to wear the crown, and that's how you come in. Very strange, I mean, how this thing takes place. So those are the initial negotiations. Then the Medrash continues. Vatamayin, she refuses. Shochava amrulo devarm she nogim bilibo. So now Vashti had to find a way to appeal to Ahasuerus so he should rescind the request. All right? How do you approach a man who's all-powerful and inebriated? Yes?
Was anything demanded of any of the other women?
No, just her. Just her. Because he said she's the most beautiful of them all. And the Megillah verifies it. Kitavas Mare. All right.
One of the women were there, though, because they were having this...
Yeah, but they were, the other woman was there, but only she was asked to come. Now, okay, Amrullah, so she said to Ahasuerus. First, appeal to male vanity. Always works. Imro anosi, no, he knows the name l'shtamesh bi. If they see me naked, they'll desire me. So, you don't want your wife to be approached, solicited by other men. It didn't work. Then she said, they'll see me, they'll be attracted to me, vargimoscha, they'll kill you. Because they'll kill you, so they should be able to marry me. Also didn't work. Why it didn't work, it's hard to say, but it did not work because now he had fixated, Ahasuerus did, on this conclusion. Then she said, Vimro mosi ki'ura, if they find something unseemly in me, some unattractive part, at misgana bi. So you'll think I'm unattractive, you'll be repulsed by me. That's also no good. Rimozatu velo nirmaz, akotzatu velo nekatz. She hinted to him, he didn't take the hint. Meaning an easy way. What was she saying? A man would understand, a melech would understand that you can't put yourself in this situation. She hinted, didn't take the hint. She stung him, it didn't work. He was impervious to any type of logic. So now she took the direct approach. Sholcha v'omrulo, komis istabloti shel beis aba hayisa. Remember, you were a groomsman for horses in my father's stable. Meaning, I'm the princess. Who are you, bud? And what was one of your jobs back then? Not just the horses. You were procurer. You were the one who got the women for the ministers. That was your job then. Now you're a king. Lo chazarta mil kulkulcha, you're returning to your old corrupt ways, meaning you're revisiting your corrupt past. Again, the remazatu v'lo nirmaz, akotzatu v'lo nekatz, he did not take the hint at all. Shocha v'omra, then she hit him with another blow. Afilu andisiklo shel beisaba lo nidonu arumim. She said, even a rebel against my grandfather's house would not be executed while he was naked. So how could you ask the queen to do it? Ahasuerus refused to listen. What happens then? So he refuses. The pasuk then continues. We'll get back to her problem in a second, but just there's one final argument. Vayiktsof hamelech meod, the king becomes enraged, v'chamaso ba'arovo, and his anger burned within him. What happened? So she used good arguments, right? She appealed to him as a man, as a melech, reminded him of his origins, who she is, and then said, you don't measure up to my grandfather as a king, because he would never do such a thing. But none of that made him mad. What made him mad? Vayiktsof, she nagged him about his drinking. And that was it. So the Gemara says, Vayiktsof hamelech meod, amai dolka bekulei hai? Why did he get so upset? So angry? Amar Rava, sholchale, she sent to him, barahu raira de ave abba, lekabel alfa chamrei shosei velo rave. She said, my grandfather's horsemen, they could drink 1,000 cups of wine and not become drunk. And you become drunk immediately. That was it. The Chamasal Barabo, he couldn't take it. Now, why, in fact, did Vashti refuse? Because, as the Gemara notes very well, Michte Priksusa Have, she herself was a Prutsa. She was a licentious person who also participated in the orgy. So why all of a sudden did she refuse? So the Gemara says something that every child is taught. Omar Mar, Shnei Mudvar Aveir Niskavna, they both wanted to encourage sexual licentiousness. So my time Maloase, why in fact did she not come? Omar Biasi Rabbi Chanina, one opinion is Malame Chaparchabat Saras, because she broke out in, with leprosy. And therefore she did not want to come because her appearance was marred. B'masnisa Tane, the Brisa taught, Bo Gavriel, the angel Gavriel came, V'asolo Zanov, made her a tail. And no woman wants to appear in public with a tail, as far as I know. So the question is, what's the pshat? What is the Gemara telling us? The Gemara is never telling us stories. The Gemara is explaining why she didn't come. According to the first opinion, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, that says she parchalot saras, it means that she herself would have come. In the end, she would have come, but then the Hashgacha intervened and produced a situation whereby she would not want to come. Saras is always a nega min hashamayim. It's a plague that's visited on a person from heaven. Like Rav Hirsch says, nega saras, nega meaning, lingoa, it's a touch of God. God touches a person who's gone astray. It's a spoke lashon hara, etc. God touches a person to remind them that they're off the derech, they have to reconsider. Here, God sent this nega so that she would not appear. Will she afflict with leprosy? It could be, it could very well be. But it means she would have agreed. She would have agreed but for divine intervention. The second opinion of the Brisa says no. But Gavriel v'asul azanov. Gavriel, the angel, came and made her a tail. All right? What does it mean, have a tail? A tail is symbolic of an animal. It means she felt to appear in this way, it would be dehumanizing. And that she would not agree to. She would rather suffer execution than be humiliated and dehumanized as a person. All right? I thought of saying, what's a tail? How much does a tail weigh? 3-4 pounds. She put on some weight, and therefore she didn't want to appear. But that can't be. It means that she felt, she would feel dehumanized, and as we know, a person would rather be in the kivshon ha'esh than to be embarrassed. Shame, embarrassment is sometimes worse than death. Another pshat occurred to me as well, that Bo Gavriel v'asul azanov, and this again, you'll tell me whether it's true or not, but a tail means she became very conscious of her body, especially conscious of flaws and imperfections. No person knows the flaws and imperfections of their own body better than each woman. So therefore, Zanov means in her own mind, as beautiful as he might have thought she was, at this point, she did not feel beautiful. And therefore, she could not do it. According to the Brisa, it means she decided on her own not to do it. And she refused on her own. According to that Zanov, a tail. Tail is something objectionable. Either something symbolic, essentially, of a non-human, because only animals have tails. So therefore she felt she'd be dehumanized, or felt she would not, she had an unattractive feature she'd not want to reveal. So she herself refused. According to the first of Mishat Saras, it means that it was divine intervention, that she herself would have appeared, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened, because if she wasn't killed, then Esther could never become the Malka. Yes? Pride.
But not even pride, it's anger to him. I'm the Malka, I'm the royal blood who made you who you are in the first place.
Right, that's correct. That's correct. That's absolutely correct. That was the statement by saying, that was when she spoke about her grandfather's house, how he did not even execute people when they were naked. And he are asking me to appear in such a way, such an embarrassing, shameful way, that the worst criminal is not treated like that.
Or more, you'd be nothing without me. In other words,
well, it was the previous point about he was just a jockey, a trainer, a groomsman. Okay, what else happens? Ahasuerus is embarrassed, but he's not enraged. He becomes enraged when she nags him. Question is, why did this happen? What was he seeking? I mean, why did Ahasuerus make such a request? Granted, men are men, but usually a man is very solicitous of his wife's privacy and modesty. So why would Ahasuerus, even inebriated, go to this other extreme to ask his wife to appear naked? Let their wives appear naked. But the queen? Why should that be? Right.
Then by putting her down,
That's part of it. Yeah, but it's true. On the other hand, would you kill some? You would kill your wife over this? And it's hard to say. It's hard to justify, certainly. I think it's something else. What comes right before Gam Vashti Malka Asta Mishtein Hashem? All right. The use of the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash and the unlimited drinking. And the unlimited drinking. And now Ashtia Kados Eino Nes. Everybody drank whatever they wanted. And now you see the sequence of events. The whole episode here, from the Mishnah itself to the death of Vashti, is linked to the use of the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Vashti, as we said, being instrumental in precluding the building of the Beis Hamikdash. But they had a certain inhibition. Even Ahasuerus had inhibitions. Notice, for the first 3 years he was the Melech, based on the experiences of Belshazzar, he himself refused to use the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Now, once the kelim were brought out, all the inhibitions were gone. There was no limit. Meaning in Ahasuerus' kingdom, there was one taboo. Kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. Because the Jews were very mysterious people. They were powerful for centuries. All of a sudden, they declined and were destroyed. But who knows what's going to become of them. The only taboo that existed was use of the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. It was a greater taboo than even the modesty or protectiveness that a husband feels for his wife. Usually a husband will zealously protect his wife's appearance. Once the greater taboo fell, the Beis Hamikdash, then every taboo fell. Even the natural feelings one has for a spouse. And therefore, Ahasuerus wanted to make his wife a symbol that all restraints are gone, all inhibitions are gone. And that's what happened. So it really was precipitated by the use of the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, which put him in a frame of mind saying that there's no morality, there are no social sanctions. There are really no limits to the potential for human misbehavior. Now that there is no mikdash anymore, and apparently it's not coming back, Rahman al-Islam, we could do whatever we want. Whatever we want. A society which is completely free, uninhibited, which actually not dissimilar to what's happening in parts of America today, which really knows no type of moral limitation at all. That was what Ahasuerus was now presenting to his people and demonstrating it through his queen. Yes?
Why would he not attach such high morality to something that he had no connection?
You mean the Beis
Hamikdash? Yeah.
Because he saw that Belshazzar had been killed that very night. Belshazzar also refused to use the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash until he calculated that it would not be rebuilt. Then he brought them out. That very night, he was killed. So you see, a superstition developed around them. And the ancients were nothing if not superstitious. It played right into their primitivism.
Once he survived,
then that was it. There was nothing else to... any type of inhibition one would feel, Hashtiya chados eino neis. Kichein yisad ha-melech al kol rav beiso lasos kirtzon ish v'ish. Now, once he lived, once he survived that event, the use of the kelim of Beis Hamikdash, then he announced to all the men, do whatever you want. Live freely, all right? Don't worry about your wives. Live anyway, fulfill any type you want, any desire, any passion. That's it. The norms are gone. Nothing else to control our impulses. When that happened, of course, so he naturally brought out Vashti and made her the symbol now of the fact that there are no moral barriers or restraints in society anymore. Once Vashti now turned this dispute with Ahasuerus, how she should appear, when she should appear, and made it personal. But once it became a matter of state, meaning, tell the king, Vatumayin, I refuse. So now already it became a threat to his monarchy, and it was destabilizing. And that was the advice that was given to him by his aides, Memuchan, that Vashti now threatens not only you, but really every man is threatened, because every wife, God forbid, will learn to say no to their husbands. And how could you run a household based on that? So therefore, Memuchan very slyly, subtly conveyed to Ahasuerus that she had to be removed from the scene. Why? As a lesson, he says it openly, the word will go out to all the women. Disparage your husbands. Treat them with contempt. Rebel against them. Because they'll say, the melech Ahasuerus amar lo havi es Vashti ha-malkah lefonov, v'lova, she did not come. How could a society survive if that becomes its foundation? Imal ha-melech tov, so if it pleases the king, then let the word go out that that can't be. That Vashti crossed, Vashti the wife, crossed her husband. Notice, Pasuk Yutes, Asher lo tavo Vashti with them el Ahasuerus. Doesn't say Vashti Amalko, even Amalko Vashti. It says Vashti didn't come. This recalcitrant, rebellious wife didn't come. So let's remove her from the scene. Umalchuso yitein amelech rusa tavo mimena. And you'll find someone else, someone better. But the world will go out. The word will go out. V'chol hanashim yitnu yukar levalehen migadol v'at katan. And all the women will have to respect their husbands, the great ones and the not-so-great ones. That's the word. Once Vashti made it into an affair of state, then it was destabilizing, and she had to be killed. Note how the Hashgacha operates. What happens? So Vashti deserved to die because of the way she treated Jews and because of her own role in thwarting the destiny of Israel. And Ahasuerus deserved to be the one to kill her because of his own corruption. And yet, Mido keneged Mido, measure for measure, everyone gets their own fate. God exploits their personalities, their weaknesses, their desires, and their flaws, all to begin the process of the salvation of the Jewish people. There's one event, the vignette of Vashti Amalko. Without it, the story is completely different. But with it, we not only see the launching pad for the rest of the story, but we see already how the Hashgacha intervenes, how divine providence intervenes and utilizes the personalities of everybody involved in order to bring about the desired conclusion, which is the saving of Klal Yisrael. It's a great miracle that happened by Yom HaMahem B'Zman HaZeh. Okay.